Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a starting receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? It is a Tuesday, October 9th, 2018. Hope you guys are having a great start to your week. It's a beautiful one here in mid-Michigan, right? Enjoy it right now because the weekend, it's going to go back to fall-like temperatures in the 50s and a bit chilly starting on Thursday and rolling on throughout the weekend, all right? So enjoy this weather. It's about 80 degrees here in mid-Michigan. The sun is beaming down, not too many clouds in the sky. It's awesome, all right? And I thank you for allowing us to be a part of your day. Well, it's day two of Michigan State football chatter leading the current sports hour. Mark D'Antonio held his weekly press conference at Spartan Stadium, and he faced the music and answered some tough questions, many critical of his program in light of the loss to Northwestern on homecoming afternoon at Spartan Stadium this past weekend. The Spartans now prepare to take on one of the top teams in the Big Ten, the Penn State Nittany Lions out in Happy Valley. On Saturday, that will be I believe kickoff is around 3 p.m. And Michigan State licking its wounds right now, trying to figure out what in the world is going wrong. Well, we tried to answer that complicated, complex, layered question on yesterday's current sports. We heard from you, and I don't think we got not one positive comment. You know, there's always at least like that one diehard fan, no matter how bad things may get. Well, I'll tell you what, yeah, we still got hope. It's still early in the year. We could still beat Penn State and rally. I didn't see any of that. That's probably like the first time I've ever experienced that on current sports. Well, I didn't get one positive comment, whether it's Ben or Steven out there, just nobody. It was just everything was negative. So, and I get it. You know, I sympathize with you guys because right now it's not great. You know, Michigan State is a team that is battling a lot of injuries. Michigan State is a team that has clearly underperformed this season, and you're seeing the same problems. And I think that's the biggest frustration. You're seeing the same problems week after week after week rise to the surface and lead to either close wins or, like we saw on Saturday, a loss. And now you play Penn State in that kind of environment with this kind of play. So, you know, it was quite entertaining as well, just kind of following, you know, the chatter throughout the day from other shows out there, reading it on social media. And also, you know, gauging the atmosphere this morning at Spartan Stadium. I feel like it's gloom and doom right now. D'Antonio tried his best, you know, to crack a few jokes and remind everyone that this is not the end of the world, that this is sports, all right? There's real people out there dealing with real-world issues. This is college football, all right? But it's no denying that, you know, you look at sports as your outlet, right, fans? You know, this is your outlet. You want your team to win. And it really hurts when you look at, you know, Michigan State football as your outlet, as your team, and it's really hard to get up right now because they are playing so bad. All right. So you'll get to hear about, you know, 10 to 12 minutes of Mark D'Antonio's press conference. All right. It was an interesting one on a lot of different levels. I got a few takeaways, as I normally do. So we'll have a brief postscript when we play it. We'll also finally dive into the Detroit Lions win over the Green Bay Packers on Sunday. Rather, well, you know what? Because you look at this Lions and Packers quote-unquote rivalry over the years, and, you know, normally Detroit Lions fans, you know, if you beat the Green Bay Packers, I mean, you are, you're excited. You're really, really excited about that win. Your emotions are through the roof. But, you know, looking at the Packers this season, you know, I haven't seen that a lot from Detroit Lions fans since that game, you know, hit triple zeros. And, you know, even yesterday, I mean, not a lot of Lions fans are excited about this win because the Packers don't look like a great team. You know, Aaron Rodgers is only he's really the only piece, you know, positive piece of that Packers puzzle right now. The defense looks horrid. Aaron Rodgers does not even have a lot of weapons to throw to make things happen on that squad. The Packers just don't look real good. So, you know, I think that's why those emotions are tempered, all right? And then the fact, you know, Mason Crosby just had a really, really, really bad day at the office. We've got a cool montage that we hope to bring to you guys later on this hour, so you don't want to miss that. I know Jack has been working on that. I heard it, actually, when I was in here prepping for my show. So we'll bring that to you later on this hour. And then on the back end of the show, we'll briefly talk about MSU Madness. As it was my fourth year emceeing that event, we didn't even dive into the MSU Madness yesterday, right? And I'll have a few takeaways from that night as Tom Izzo, head coach of the Michigan State men's basketball team, and Susie Merchant, head coach of the women's basketball team, pulled a little magic that night on Friday. All right, so we'll recap that night and so much more while also, of course, inviting you all to be a part of the hour as we customarily do. If you would like to be a part of the show, 517-355-WKAR is the number to call, 517-355-9527. You can go to facebook.com/WKAR News, our live stream there. Comment below that video, and you can tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR_sports. Here are your quick hit headliners. All right, and we start with Michigan State men's soccer. I want to let you guys know that MSU men's soccer squares off against Akron tonight at DeMartin Stadium. The 13th-ranked Spartans are coming off a 2-0 win at Maryland and carry a 9-1-2 record into tonight's match. Akron sits at 4-4-2, coming off a draw with Bowling Green in their MAC opener. The Spartans and the Zips met last season where Akron knocked off the number 4 Spartans at home. Damon Rensing's squad will try to even the score tonight. Kick time set for 7 p.m. You can catch that one on the Big Ten Network. All right, pro soccer in downtown Lansing got approved last night by the city council. They unanimously approved a deal to bring soccer to Cooley Law School Stadium this spring. The team, named Lansing Ignite, will play in the USL League One, a league tied to the USL and Major League Soccer. Now, this approval marks the end of Lansing United's men's team, an amateur club that ran for 5 years. Play will begin in late March with as many as 17 home games running into September. Very exciting stuff there. All right, Michigan State men's basketball. On October 27th, the MSU men's basketball team will travel to Minneapolis to play Gonzaga in a closed scrimmage. The exhibition will be closed to media and fans, and the schools cannot promote the game. Now, Jeff Goodman, a basketball analyst at Stadium, he broke the news yesterday on Twitter announcing North Carolina and Villanova's closed scrimmage as well. Now, MSU has not participated in any closed scrimmages since the NCAA began allowing them in 2005. NCAA allows two exhibition games until this year. MSU had gone that route. Last year, they were granted a third against Georgia in Grand Rapids because proceeds went to charity. Aside from the secret scrimmage, the Spartans will play Northern Michigan at home on October 30th. So again, Michigan State and Gonzaga close scrimmage October 27th. According to the Michigan football team's Facebook page, the show, College Game Day of ESPN, will set up shop and broadcast from Ingalls Mall, located at the north end of the Diag between the Bell Tower and the University of Michigan Alumni Association, just south of Washington Street. Now, in previewing the number 12 versus number 15 Wisconsin and Michigan matchup, the show is free to attend and open to the public and will begin broadcasting at 9 a.m. on ESPN. Fans who wish to be seen on television with clever signs, one of the show's staples, should plan to arrive early. History is somewhat on Michigan's side when it comes to the College Game Day show, as the Wolverines are 9-3 when the show broadcasts from Ann Arbor. The Saturday night game against Wisconsin will be one of the games of the season for the Wolverines. To the National Basketball Association, where the Detroit Pistons embarked on some preseason basketball action, losing in overtime to the Brooklyn Nets, 110-108, your final. It was only a preseason game, but the Pistons got to see what they wanted to see. To some degree, the win or loss really didn't matter. It was more about seeing Blake Griffin and Reggie Jackson at game speed and in-game action together. Quote, we got off to a slow start for whatever reason. We missed a lot of easy shots that I'll live with, and it set the tone the way we played the rest of the way. That's coming from head coach, first-year head coach with the red, white, and royal blue, Dwayne Casey. He went on to say, quote, I really liked the way our guys competed. We played against their starters, with Blake and Reggie being on a minute's restriction, and I like the fight. So there you have that. The Detroit Red Wings were in action last night. The Ducks edged the Red Wings 3-2 in a shootout at the Honda Center, keeping the Wings winless. Anaheim's Troy Terry was the lone goal scorer in the shootout, as the Ducks went to 3-0 on the year. The Wings had opportunities, especially in the second period, to take a two-goal lead, but didn't, and are still searching for their first victory. They sit at 0-1-2 right now. Tyler Bertuzzi and Darren Helm had Wings goals, while goaltender Jimmy Howard made 25 saves, including several great ones in OT that kept the Ducks from winning earlier. They now face Toronto at home on Thursday and then travel to Boston, Montreal, Tampa, and Florida, all of which will be difficult games. This young Wings team somehow has to continue to keep grinding for this current lineup. This really is a daunting schedule. And Little Caesars Arena is doing away with its red seats. They will now replace them with black seats. LCA announced yesterday it will begin a months-long process of installing black seats beginning in December. Now, the red seats have been noteworthy for highlighting empty seats during the Detroit Red Wings and Detroit Pistons telecast, although both franchises say fans are dispersed throughout the arena in clubs and bars. Yeah, come on now, really. The installation is expected to be completed in phases. Work will begin in December and will be conducted during non-event times. All right, Jim Brandstatter, the former longtime radio analyst for the Lions. Brandstatter was unceremoniously fired from his post during the offseason. He was the color analyst on the radio for the Detroit Lions alongside Dan Miller. Now, Brandstatter posted a thank you note on Twitter yesterday after his experience the day before as the Lions beat the Green Bay Packers 31-23. The Lions actually hosted Jim Brandstatter. He didn't broadcast the game, of course. He was just maxing, taxing, and relaxing in a suite, which is pretty cool. This is what Brandstatter posted on his Twitter. Quote, great day yesterday. Invited to Lions game by team president Rod Wood. got to visit with Mrs. Ford, great lady, Lions won, and was presented a very nice game ball. Really nice. Thanks, Rod. Thank you, Mrs. Ford. And last night, history was made. The New Orleans Saints down the Washington Redskins 43-19 on Monday Night Football, but all eyes were on quarterback Drew Brees and his record-breaking performance. He needed 201 yards for the record entering the night and passed with flying colors, tossing 250 yards and two touchdowns by halftime, becoming the NFL's all-time leader in passing yards. At 39 years old, he broke Peyton Manning's record of 71,940 yards. A 62-yard TD to Traquan Smith cemented the new record. Officials stopped the game, handed the ball to the Pro Football Hall of Fame officials, and the Superdome crowd offered a standing ovation. Peyton Manning had a pre-recorded congratulatory message that played on the Superdome's video board saying he broke the record, quote, the right way. A slew of celebrities and athletes congratulated Brees, including LeBron James, Ellen DeGeneres, Dan Marino, and many, many others. But that was a really cool scene to watch Brees break the record on a touchdown pass nonetheless. And then play stops and his team mobs him on the field. You know, he gets the game ball. His family's over there. He hugs his kids. That was just awesome. He was also mic'd up during that entire game. So you got to hear the audio of what that sounded like and how emotional Brees truly was. And sad news here. George Taliaferro, who in 1949 became the first African-American player to be drafted by an NFL team, sadly, he has passed away at the age of 91. His death was announced by the George Taliaferro Sport Association. Taliaferro was a three-time All-American at Indiana, drafted by the Chicago Bears in the 13th round of the 1949 draft, but he never played for the team. He had already committed to play for the L.A. Dons of the All-America Football Conference and played for the team during the 1949 season. Taliaferro was a Bears fan, but had signed with the Dons a week before the NFL draft. Again, George Taliaferro, in 1949, he became the first African-American player to be drafted by an NFL team, sadly passing away at the age of 91. And I'm just sitting here kind of thinking, because yesterday I actually surprised my grandmother in Detroit, who turned 91 for her birthday, the day after mine. So sad news there. Hug someone you love today. Again, tomorrow is never promised. All right, that wraps up our current sports quick hit headliners. If you would like to be a part of the show, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/WKAR News. Again, our live stream is up and running there. You can comment below that video, and you can tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR_sports.
It's hard, you know. There's just so many people that are responsible for that share or had a hand in that can share in that. And you know, before the game, two of the most important people in my life, two of the people that were probably most responsible for my football career early on in my life, thank you, are up in heaven. You know, it was my mom and my grandfather, and you know, there's a lot of people that I wanted to prove right tonight and make proud, but none more so than them. And so I know they're watching down on me at all times, and my kids, and I'm just so grateful.
Right again, salute to Drew Brees on this Tuesday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. That was really the most entertaining sports moment of the day yesterday that I saw. I mean, how about that Yankees and Red Sox game? Oh my goodness. I mean, that was ugly. I mean, 16-1? 16-1? So again, quick scores from the MLB playoffs yesterday. Boston beats New York 16-1. The Dodgers over the Braves, LA over Atlanta 6-2. And you also had the Houston Astros over the Cleveland Indians. That one was a blowout as well, 11-3. All right. Only one game today, and that will be Boston and New York. Boston leads the series now 2-1 in the ALDS. This is game 4, of course, 8:07 p.m. first pitch. So let's see if the Yankees can if they're going to go down with some pride, right? Because that was ugly yesterday. So didn't watch much baseball yesterday. I did check out at least the like 75% of last night's Monday Night Football game. I don't know why I tortured myself that long in that game, because that was also a blowout. I had one player playing, and Michael Thomas, who I needed to get me some points for fantasy, and I ended up falling in that matchup. Not that you care about my fantasy team, I know you guys could care less, but I'm just saying. All right, I needed some big points there. That's the only reason why I watched most of that game. But also to see Drew Brees. I mean, Drew Brees, you know, becoming the NFL's passing leader now. I mean, he is that guy. And to do it, you know, the way he did on a touchdown throw, that was pretty awesome. The NFL's all-time leader now in passing yards, 39 years old, breaking Peyton Manning's record of 71,940. Jack Kerwin, behind the glass, you're engineer for today's Current Sports. Do you know how old, can we look up how old Peyton Manning was when he set the record? Because I want to say he was around the same age, right? I wonder who was younger.
It would be close, because I think it was his first year in Denver.
Exactly. Yeah, he was about like 39 years old too, I think. I wonder who was younger when they accomplished that feat. But, you know, it was really cool seeing Drew Brees out there, you know, just torching that Washington Redskins secondary. I mean, that Redskins defense is bad. And Drew Brees had a field day yesterday throwing the football around. But, you know, to accomplish that feat on that kind of a play, and then you see Drew celebrating, and there was even one guy they caught on camera. The brother was crying. He was that emotional. I mean, you could see him just kind of wiping tears away and head down, and then some more tears come out. I mean, yeah, it was a very emotional time to be a New Orleans Saints fan last night. You know, I wish I could get Isaac Constance on today's show. We all know Isaac, my former engineer. He's born and raised in NOLA, a diehard New Orleans Saints fan. I wonder if Isaac shed a tear last night. But congratulations to Drew Brees. It was pretty emotional watching him, you know, go to the sideline and embrace his kids. And I like how he looked at his kids and said, look, man, I told you guys you can. And again, I'm paraphrasing here, but, you know, basically said, look, I told you guys you can do whatever you put your mind to. That was an awesome moment as he embraces his family there. So do we have that, Jack? Who's younger?
So he was also 39 years old. What I was thinking of was the year he threw for 50 touchdowns, and that was his first year in Denver. This was his last season,
okay,
2015.
So who would technically be younger in months? We have to really dive into that. If they both were 39 years old, I'm curious to see, you know, how many months separate the two and who was actually technically younger. But awesome stuff last night from Drew Brees, representing the short quarterbacks out there. And that's something that Russell Wilson made sure to note when he tweeted Drew Brees. Hey, you're doing it for the little guys out there, the little QBs out there. So congratulations to Drew Brees. All right. Wanted to start at least on some kind of light note, because, man, it's been pretty dark in the sports world when discussing Michigan State football here locally. You know, I know Michigan State fans, right now, you guys are not happy. Not happy whatsoever. And, you know, even when I went back to Detroit, Okay, real quick. You do have the stat, Jack. Who was younger?
Well, I don't know. I haven't found out exactly who was younger. What's worth noting is this is Drew Brees' 18th season in the NFL, and Peyton Manning did it in 17 seasons. So in the NFL time, he got there a little quicker than Brees.
Okay, interesting. I did not know that. All right, awesome. Great stuff there. Thank you, Jack. But back to Michigan State football now, real quick here, because we're going to play you about 10 to 12 minutes of Mark D'Antonio's Tuesday morning press conference, which he holds every single Tuesday morning inside of the Spartan Stadium, Tom and Loopy Izzo Media Center. As Michigan State football, they're trying to figure things out right now. You know, Michigan State football is not in a good space. We have seen this team really struggle since week one. You know, even the wins. You know, Michigan State right now, you know, you look at that the Arizona State loss and now the loss to Northwestern, and even the wins that you evaluate. I mean, Michigan State has not looked, you know, convincing. You know, they sit at 3-2 right now, and now you have to play the number 8 team in the nation against Penn State, a Penn State team that remembers what happened last year. You know, that game that lasted from like noon all the way to like 9 p.m. due to multiple weather delays. I'll never forget that game. And Penn State right now, you know, Penn State comes into this game 4-1. They remember what happened last year. They are coming off, you know, that loss to Ohio State by 1 point. They are going to, you know, really be focused and locked in this game against Michigan State. You can bet your bottom dollar that. But, you know, for Spartan fans, you know, I get the frustration. You know, we had a whole hour, therapy hour, if you will, of you guys calling in and venting as to what is wrong with this team. Many of you harped on Dave Warner. A few of you commented on our Facebook live stream and said that you believe that Dave Warner needs to be fired. And, you know, we had a caller call in to say that D'Antonio is loyal to a fault, which I do believe he is. D'Antonio addressed that today in his presser, and he addressed the criticism, and he addressed, you know, how many feel about his coaching staff and his coordinators. And heck, I'm looking at I read an article this morning, and I'm staring at the piece right now still on my laptop after I read it, from Sean Windsor, entitled, quote, Sean Windsor of the Detroit Free Press, entitled, quote, "Mark D'Antonio has failed to adapt. It's costing Michigan State." And he makes some solid points there. Right, and again, back to my point at the very beginning of the hour, you know, Michigan State, you know, you're seeing these same problems week after week after week come to the surface, and you're seeing these same problems and saying to yourself, how have you not adjusted by now? You know, why does this keep occurring? You know, why is Brian Lewerke continuing to throw these turnovers, and why is the play calling still so vanilla? Why can't that run game get going? When will this team get healthy? You know, which in a way is, well, certainly it's not, that's not D'Antonio's fault. That's not the coaching staff's fault. The health of this team is the health of this team. I mean, that's the game of football. But there are so many glaring injuries to Michigan State right now. And there's a lot of layers to this conversation. And I get the frustration. And later on this hour, you know, I'll read a few of your tweets, because I promised you guys I would do that today. I didn't get a chance to do that yesterday. And many of you bring up some very valid points. And the only thing that Mark D'Antonio can do right now when it comes to addressing you all to try and ease your nerves is basically go up there and give you some coach speak and say, look, we're trying to get to the bottom of it. Our goals are still in front of us. You're going to hear a little bit of that, you know. But there's some moments in here where D'Antonio is very honest, and he addresses that loyalty. And he notes how he is not going to, quote, micromanage his coaches. And I got to admit, when I heard him say that, I just said to myself, here we go. Here's that conversation that we had yesterday and yet on yesterday's current sports. Again, if you missed it, go to WKAR.org. Not right now, later on. We play to you the Raw press conference from Dave Warner, who is taking the most heat. I think, you know, in the pecking order here, it goes Dave Warner and then Mark D'Antonio, because D'Antonio has done nothing about the Dave Warner, quote unquote, situation. And again, I encourage you all to take a step back and look at the entire package here. Sure, does Dave Warner deserve criticism? Without a doubt. Should Dave Warner still be the offensive coordinator for Michigan State University? I don't think so. But again, I'm not the head coach of Michigan State football. Should there be a change? Yeah, again, I think there should be a change. But again, Mark D'Antonio, you had to point the finger at Mark D'Antonio if you're going to go with that argument, because Mark D'Antonio is loyal. He is not going to let go of his assistant coaches. That is not how he rolls. He is too loyal for that. So can Dave Warner make some adjustments here? And again, through this part of the season and dating back to last year, I mean, Dave Warner is not great at that. So what area can you cling to? If you are a Spartan fan right now, what area can you look at and say, well, we still got this. This gives us some hope. What, Felton Davis? That's probably it. Just keep throwing the football to Felton Davis. That should be the offense, right? Just throw and feed the football to Felton Davis. Even if they triple team him, just throw the football to Felton Davis. He's that good. I don't know what else you can harp on here. The defensive line as well. I mean, you know that, you know, Michigan State defensively, I mean, they lead the nation in stopping the pass rush, but that's about it. You know, Michigan State right now, you cannot lose to Northwestern. So what I'm going to do right now, I'm going to shut up. You've heard my thoughts dating back to yesterday, okay? And again, go to WKAR.org if you missed it. I want you to hear what Mark D'Antonio had to say this morning addressing the woes of his team. And I want to play it as at a specific part here. Here's Mark D'Antonio, again, to begin this press conference, addressing what the formula for success has customarily been for his football team.
The formula for success here has been, if you can run it 40 times, I don't care if you get 120 yards or 130 yards or 140 yards or 240. If you can run it 40 times, you got a pretty good chance to win. That's been our success. That's been one of the things that I say, hey, you know, run the ball. Now, if you throw it 60 times, there's a good chance we may have 300 yards. As evidence, I mean, I see the statistics about Northwestern. Does everyone know that you know, we threw the ball the last three games against Northwestern for 1,200 yards, but we didn't win the game? So you got to be able to run the football to some degree. Especially when the yardage gets short, or when you're in a, you know, situations that demands that you've got to be able to run the ball. So we're going to figure out a way to do that, and that's our challenges.
Mark, you guys scored a touchdown on a reverse last game. I know you thought you also had came close to breaking a big play on a trick play earlier in the game. You know, what sort of goes into deciding when those will be most useful? Is it some of the defense is showing you? You're trying to create spark offensively?
I think what goes into deciding that is you got to catch people off guard. So you really don't want to tell people when you're going to do those things, really. Sometimes it's after a big play. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's in the middle of a series. Sometimes it's not. I think it's sort of just rolling the dice a little bit. Everybody has probably a philosophy on when they want to do it, but that doesn't mean it's going to work. Sort of like a trick play. I mean, on special teams, probably.
Mark, following up on what Noah just said, in both your conference games, you've had a wide receiver rush for more than half of your yards. Have you ever seen that before, and what does that mean to you?
Well, it's frustrating. Yeah, it's frustrating, you know. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's about moving the football, too. And in this day and age, you know, football, you see a lot of wide receiver, you know, type plays, even that little jet sweep where you toss the ball up in the air is supposedly designated a pass, but it's a run. From my perspective, it's a perimeter run type thing. So, but yeah, we got it. As I said earlier, we got to get the, you know, LJ's been out, had two other tailbacks working or three, you know, so we've got to find a way to run the football. You know, and I don't think that's earth-shattering. I don't think I'm letting the cat out of the bag there, am I? I don't think. I think Penn State's aware of that. So we'll go with that. It's a good thing you got that picture of me smiling today.
McSorley, obviously, dual threat guy, averaging almost 90 yards a game rushing.
Let's talk about Penn State.
What, you guys were effective in slowing him down on the ground last year. I know he threw for a good number of yards, but how do you contain him and make him so he's one-dimensional and not getting both ways?
I think McSorley's an excellent player. I mean, he buys time. He's going to scramble. He's going to launch it. They're going to throw the ball down the field. Their average attempt is 13.8 yards down the field. That's their average attempt. So their ball is going down the field for them. They have big play receivers. They have an excellent running back. Got their four of their five offensive linemen back. So they're a challenge offensively. And he creates that dynamic, that multiple, you know, run pass guy type quarterback. And he's got a toughness aspect to him too. So I think he's an excellent player, a great leader. And a lot of things, their success hinges on what he does. So we need to negate his abilities as best we can.
Mark, looking at everything that you guys have, so from day one, you know, when you start having those injuries with Josiah and Coles and to now, where does this challenge rank in terms of what you guys as a staff have had to maybe shuffle or endure during a season?
Well, you mean relative to other years?
Yeah.
You know, I've never really – I look at the year as a in its totality at the end of the year. I don't I imagine this is as many early injuries as we've had in those times. But at the end of the year, how did we come out? You know, we've really not had that many season-ending injuries. I think Jake Hartberger is probably the only one that I would say. So we're getting guys back, and we'll get them back. But you guys got to deal with – you know, it's sort of like – you know, I come up here all the time, guys, and – stand up here and get grilled. I asked if the sharks were in the water today or the wolves were at the door. I wasn't sure which. But, you know, you're dealing with life issues. You know, sometimes things don't go well for you. You know, whether you're in a corporation or whether you're in a relationship or whatever it is, you know, sometimes things don't go well and you have to improvise, you have to change up things, but you can make it work. If you have good people, and we have good people, we have good people on our football team, and we have great people on our staff, and we have a long track record of success. And if you have that, then you can always flip it, and you can always turn things and get things going in the right direction. And that's my belief system. So,
just kind of as a follow up to that, is Jake done for the season?
That's a pretty good answer.
Yeah, it is a great answer. But is Jake done for the year though? You kind of mentioned that. Is that changed from previously?
Jake is, in all general purposes, I believe, done for the year, because I think to throw your right leg up in the air when it's been broken is probably a little bit of an issue, you know, from a confidence standpoint.
Can you
get a red shirt on him, a medical red shirt on him, for him to be able to punt next year. So, and that's the intent right now, unless something drastically changes. That's the intent. And he knows that, and I've talked to his family about that. So that's pretty much where it's at.
Two questions. I'll ask them one at a time. The first, in the past, when you were not happy with your offense, you did get very involved. Are you anticipating more involvement on your part? I know Sunday night you said, hey, I'm a defensive coach, but are you anticipating more involvement like in the past with your offense?
I've always been involved to a certain extent to sit there and say, what about this? What about that? Can we do this? Can we do that? Draw something on the board. Tell them, hey, we need to put this in and those type of things. But you basically, like I said, you have formation sheets that are very in-depth, and you can't recreate the wheel. Even if you said, hey, we're going to change next year to something, it's very difficult to recreate the wheel. What you do have is you have a vast library to go back to and say, okay, how can we tweak this or tweak that to help generate some productivity in certain areas? I'd say that's it. And that's what I do. I always look at the quality control and different components of quality control and ask, okay, what are we doing here? What are we doing there? Are we doing these things here, which are, you know, from a defensive standpoint, you know, recognizable? You know, do we change here? Do we change there? That's the way I've always done it. And again, I go back to not going to micromanage. Maybe my coaches will say I do. Okay, but I'm going to try not to micromanage. I'm going to try and empower coaches to do their job. and allow them to do their job with confidence. So I'm not going to be in a threatening mode. I'm just not. It's not going to be who I am. I allowed them to do their work, and I'm going to believe in them and push it forward. That's what I've done. And it's served us well.
You mentioned earlier that since you've gotten here, the motto has been, you have to run the ball. You come from Nick Saban's tree, where he certainly holds that philosophy. But this year, it's been different at Alabama. And he said on Saturday, he's just come to the point he's learned there's no more points for running and passing, and if he can't run, he's going to throw it. Obviously, you still want to run, but does there need to be a shift when you can't?
I think there has been a shift when we can't. I think we're throwing now more than we have. And I try and taint that and say, hey, we got to run it. You know, at the Indiana game, I said, hey, we got to run the ball. And even though we ran for, what, 140 or something, we ran the ball somewhat. Even if it's, you know, we got to keep people honest. Can't allow it to go into just a pass rush game like it did at the end of the game last week. We have to keep it honest because we have limitations in other areas too. You know, we're down some wideouts. We're down some offensive linemen, you know. I mean, it's, you know, you're trying to balance things a little bit. So, but we'll be all right. I have confidence in our football team. I have confidence in our drive and who we are as individuals and how we approach things.
Coach, in the past, kind of following up on that, you've had Burbridge and Lippitt and Fowler and very good receivers, but with what Felton Davis did, it was a real turning point for you in that third quarter, the rush for the touchdown, the fade for the touchdown, and kind of building on what Hondo just said, is there a way to incorporate him in the offense, maintaining the balance you're talking about, getting those 40 rushes, but making the most out of a guy that is prevailing as your top talent on offense?
Yeah, you know, we're going to target, obviously, again, I hope, you know, we're going to target guys. We're going to get the ball to people that we need to get the ball to. And I thought we did a great job last week saying, okay, here's Felton. We're missing this guy or that guy. Let's get the ball to him a little bit more. We always have done that. And we always will continue to do that, find ways. And every football team tries to find ways. Saquon Barkley, how are we going to get the ball to him 30 times? You know, so we go into every football game and say, how are we going to get the ball to this individual X number of times? You know, we've got to have more playmakers to do that with, and we're going to try and find those guys as we go forward. You know, and I think we have playmakers, but they got to get back healthy. And we have some other guys, too.
You're not going to point fingers, but Brian doesn't seem to be in the rhythm he was last year. Are those circumstances a big part of it, or is there something he needs to do to get his mojo back?
Well, I think that it's, again, I think when you look at that, you're saying, you know, why? If he's not in his rhythm, why? Well, maybe a defensive tackle's right here. That has a lot to do with it, okay? So we've got to protect the quarterback. We've got to give him time to throw. There's some different things that we can do to help with that. We have to do those things. And we got to get him in rhythm. And, you know, when you look at that football game, if you really watch the film, you know, he made some unbelievable throws, right on the money throws. And he made, you know, he played pretty well. It got sort of, like I said, the frustrating thing for me as the head football coach, if we would have went down the field and not scored in the game, or even got to the 30 and not scored in the game at the end of the game, okay, you just live with it. But the way things sort of fell apart those last two previous series before the 2 minute drive, you know, that was what was frustrating because it didn't give us a chance to be successful because the guy was sitting right back in our lap and he's ditching the ball and that just looks like we're not, you know, we're not playing on one cylinder, let alone all cylinders, and that's frustrating. And that's what I was most frustrated with about that football game, really, that those two series. I can't control about the pitch. I can't control about, you know, a guy getting, you know, walking over somebody with his leg up in the air and getting called for taunting. I can't control those things. I got to play through those things. We have to play through those things. But the things you can control are the things that frustrate you. So that's what we deal with.
Mark D'Antonio, after the loss to Northwestern, commenting this morning during his weekly press conference inside of Spartan Stadium as the Spartans now look ahead to take on Penn State on the road in Happy Valley on Saturday afternoon. A few things of note there. if you happen to tune in late or just completely missed it. Punter Jake Hartbarger is done for the season, which, again, so many injuries on this team right now. The fourth-year punter injured his right leg, if you remember, at Arizona State on September 8th. And Antonio said that he would be at risk swinging his punting leg if he is not fully healthy. So MSU expects to seek a medical redshirt, which would allow Hartbarger to return, seeing as though he's a senior, for a sixth season. Hartbarger redshirted as a true freshman in 2014. So that's a big blow because I think that, you know, Hartbarger, I mean, he is really consistent, and he's a solid punter who, and we all know how important field position is, especially when playing in the Big Ten. So that's a blow for Michigan State. Also, running the football. You know, you heard Mark D'Antonio's formula for success traditionally as head coach of this program. And, you know, he said, look, you got to run it at least 40 times. But again, if you are having no success in doing that, you have to make adjustments. So I think that just kind of adds more fuel to the fire of those who have the opinion that D'Antonio is not adjusting. He is not trying new things because the things that have worked in the past just simply aren't working. Even though D'Antonio says, hey, I think that we're throwing the football more. But every once in a while, especially in key moments in the game, you see Mark D'Antonio just going back to that old formula, and it does not convert to success. And last but not least, D'Antonio saying, quote, I am not going to be in threatening mode. All right. Basically saying, look, I'm not going to intimidate my coaches and pressure them to change the game plan. I'm going to let them do their job, basically, and we'll go from there. What's your reaction on that? 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Again, go to facebook.com/WKAR News. Or you can tweet us. Tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Or you can tweet the show at WKAR_sports. Let's hit our final break here in the show. When we come back, we will finally dive into this whole Detroit Lions win over the Green Bay Packers. And I got a question to ask you guys. Do you feel better or worse or the same about your Detroit Lions after that win over the Green Bay Packers? That and more, you are listening to WKAR's Current Sports.
It'll be a 41-yard field goal try by Mason Crosby. Good snap, good hold, and hooked it left.
And you see it come to fruition, and you execute just like the Lions did. Paid off.
38-yard field goal. Oh, my goodness. Mason Crosby is 0-for-3 in this game.
No! God, please, no! 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 No!
I didn't even know that Adams was on the field in the first half, in the first quarter anyway. The 56-yard try. Wide right.
Nope.
Yo, that was good stuff. That was great stuff. Shout out to the team behind the glass. Was that all you, Jack, or you had some help behind there?
I got to take credit for that. That was all me.
Nice. That's good stuff right there as Mason Crosby. That really just about sums it up, right? I mean, Mason Crosby had one of the worst days you can have at the office as an NFL kicker. I mean, the dude missed 4 field goals and an extra point in that loss to the Detroit Lions on Sunday. And again, if he puts those through, we're looking at a different outcome in that game. But the final was 31-23. There was a moment where the camera actually panned to Crosby on the sidelines, and you had Aaron Rodgers, star quarterback of the Packers, just kind of consoling Crosby, who normally is money. That's the thing about it. I mean, you know, as I stated on yesterday's Current Sports, I mean, Crosby is, you know, he came into that game as like a 79%, you know, kicker. I mean, I could not believe that he missed that many times. I mean, that was tough to watch. It really was. And Twitter absolutely blew up after watching that just horrid performance. But, you know, the question I have now, you know, looking at this Detroit Lions team, and, you know, I predicted, I didn't see how the Lions were going to come through that stretch of football with one win, let alone two. You know, that stretch of football after, you know, they had, after the Monday Night Football loss, 48-17 loss at the hands of the New York Jets, and then they go on to lose to the San Francisco 49ers, and you look at the schedule from there, then they play, you know, they had the Patriots and then the Cowboys and then the Packers, and I didn't see how they were going to, you know, steal one of those games, let alone two. And they beat, you know, two quarterbacks who I think at the end of the day, when their careers are said and done, we all know that Tom Brady, you know, is going to be he's going to be on the Mount Rushmore of quarterbacks, you know, in NFL history. You know, many people like myself already have him as the greatest quarterback to ever play the game. And then Aaron Rodgers, when his career is said and done, he's going to be at least in the top 10. I mean, these are two top 10 all-time quarterbacks that have been beaten this year by the Detroit Lions. How odd is that to say? So the question I have, is it fool's gold? When you saw what the Detroit Lions did against the Green Bay Packers, do you feel better? Do you feel worse somehow? Or the same about the Detroit Lions after that win? I want to pose that question behind the glass right now as we come up here on the back end of the show. Jack, what do you think about this team now? Do you feel better, worse, or the same about where this team is headed this season after that win against Aaron Rodgers?
After that win against Green Bay, I'm more or less at the same spot I was 2 weeks ago after they defeated the New England Patriots. It's a nice win, but you got to do more. And for me, they got to win the next two games and get to 4-3 coming out of the bye week. They play on the road at Miami, and then they host the Seattle Seahawks. If they win those two games, they'll have won 4 of 5 after the horrid 0-2 start. Mm-hmm. They'll be above 500, and, you know, it's not clear exactly what it's going to take to get a wild card spot this year in the NFC. It's going to be pretty tough for the Lions, obviously, because even coming off that win, they're still in fourth place in the division. So to win the division outright would be an incredibly tall task at 2-3. But for me, they got to win the next two games, get up to 4-3, and kind of keep pace with everybody who's ahead of them in the division.
Okay, I feel you on that. What about you, Alec? I mean, after the 31-23 win this past Sunday over the Green Bay Packers, how are you feeling about the Lions? Are you more encouraged? Are you feeling better? Are you feeling worse somehow? Or are you feeling the same about, you know, the future of this team this season?
I don't feel that much better, considering if it weren't for Mason Crosby having a career worst performance, the Lions would have lost.
Yeah.
And so I'm feeling slightly better that now their red zone completion in terms of getting touchdowns in the red zone has been a lot better. They were 4-for-4 last week against Green Bay. And considering the Lions were one of the worst last year, mm-hmm. it's been a major improvement this season. And Kenny Galladay and the rest of the wide receiving core has given me some hope that their offense is going to produce a lot more come the rest of the season. But defense, including Jared Davis, if they don't get better at, you know, getting the long ball, then, you know, it's going to be a long season if they don't get better with the long ball.
I hear you on that. You know, I'm kind of the same. I'm with you guys, man. I feel like this Packers team is bad. All right, let's just call it like it is. I go back to the Green Bay and Chicago game. If it wasn't for a heroic performance from Aaron Rodgers playing on one leg, they would have lost that game, right? And I'm not saying that because I think that the Bears are legit this season, but I'm just saying that game would have been a complete blowout in favor of the Bears if Aaron Rodgers didn't put on some kind of Superman cape here. So, you know, you look at the Patriots. The Lions caught the Patriots at the very beginning of the year, where we know the Patriots, when you look at the Patriots' record after going to a Super Bowl, they don't come out the gates that following season just lights out and, you know, just stomping on opponents out the gate. I mean, if you look at this New England Patriots team right now, this looks like if the Lions and the Patriots were to play this Sunday, I think the Lions would lose. And I think it has the potential to be a blowout. The Patriots have figured some things out here, as Bill Belichick usually does. That's the mastermind that is Bill Belichick. Again, I always say that the measure of great coaches, what separate great coaches from good coaches, and heck, the great from the exceptional and iconic coaches, is your ability to troubleshoot quickly, make adjustments, and go out there and execute. Get better by the game. And Bill Belichick is one of the greatest to ever do that, arguably the greatest in the history of football to do that. So if the Patriots were to play the Lions right now, I think it would be a different outcome. That was a bad New England Patriots team that the Lions played, and that's not the same team that we see today. When it comes to the Packers are just a bad football team right now. Again, Aaron Rodgers is the only positive piece for that squad. So moving forward, I mean, this is feel good, and it's a bit weird because, you know, normally Detroit Lions fans, you know, when the Lions beat the Packers, oh, you're ready to throw a party. You are ready to go crazy. But it's a different feel this year. I should ask this question. I mean, if you take that New England Patriots team that the Lions played earlier this season and compare it to the Green Bay Packers, I think it'll be kind of a fun debate to kind of debate which team is worse. The Packers right now or the Patriots back then? Because we were having the same conversation about the past that we're having about the Green Bay Packers right now. All right. Got a few more points I want to make, and I want to take a wider look at the NFL scene and give to you some of my breakout stars and teams to watch for. And again, I really like, man, the LA Rams. They are the sexy Super Bowl pick this season, and for a lot of reasons why. I mean, they're great. All right. Okay. We'll see you tomorrow, folks. We are now on a 23-hour break. And, again, we'll dive into some more Lions and NFL chatter. And we'll also talk about Jim Harbaugh and that Michigan football team, as they have a big game coming on Saturday night, college game day, the whole hoopla. That and more. We'll see you on Wednesday, folks. And be easy, people.